Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Skullduggery by Aaron Elkins, narrated by Joel Richards. 1. Teotitlan del Valle, Oaxaca, Mexico. Not for nothing had Flaviano Sandoval been the village police chief for almost 6 months now. For one thing, he had learned to recognize trouble when he saw it. And this man sitting across the desk from him, oh, he was trouble, all right. Definitely not a local, Sandoval knew everybody who lived in Teotitlan. Everybody knew everybody who lived in Teotitlan. And for sure not a turista come to shop for weavings or to stay at the Hacienda Encantada up the hill. So what else could he be? Only trouble. And trouble was something Flaviano Sandoval was averse to, by disposition and by constitution. If ever there was a man not cut out to be a police chief, it was Flaviano Sandoval. Small, soft-bodied, and sharp-featured, some might say rodent-faced, he had little ability and no great desire to project a command presence. He was fretful, easily intimidated, and prone to nervous stomach upsets. It had never been his aim to be a police chief. It had never been his desire to be a police chief. His desire was to one day be mayor of Teotitlan. But traditions were traditions, and before one could be considered for that esteemed post, one had to prove one's civic merits in a long-established progression of service positions. For 2 years, he had served as chairman of the school board. For a year before that, as the administrator of the municipal marketplace. In 6 more months, God willing, he would have finished this grueling, nerve-wracking tenure as chief of police with mind and body whole, and would move on to become the executive officer of the village council. And 1 year after that, again God willing, he would be elected as alcalde, from which the step to mayor was virtually assured. But for now, he was still the jefe de policia, and trouble was the last thing he wanted. The man had been spotted an hour earlier, at about 5 p.m., slogging up the steep, cobbled street toward the resort, and his looks had set off alarm bells. A jailbird's face, heavy-jawed and sleepy-eyed, with a drooping Emiliano Zapata mustache and a dirty, graying ponytail hanging down and back from under a tattered campesino's hat, and with a leathery, pock-marked skin, as creased and pouched as an old valise that sat out on the top of the bus too many times. Blue-green tattoos, lizards, snakes, twisted up the sides of his neck from the grimy collar of his denim jacket. Pompeo, the senior of Sandoval's 2 policemen, had stopped him to talk to him. When he found that the man had no identification, had a total of 6 pesos on him, and had a story that didn't add up, he'd brought him in to see the jefe. That had spoiled the jefe's day right there. Pompeo was a good sergeant. Unlike Sandoval, he'd been born to be a cop. He loved the work, and he was big and fierce-looking enough to be intimidating in a way that Sandoval never could. If truth be told, Sandoval was a little afraid of him himself. Pompeo had been there for a decade, so he knew the ropes, and had been the main reason that Sandoval had thought he could cope with the chief's position at all. If Pompeo took care of the street situations, the traffic run-ins, the occasional quarrelsome drunk, Sandoval, who had taken a month-long correspondence course in public administration, after all, could surely handle the administrative matters. Also, Sandoval had given himself a reasonable command of English, of great use to a local police chief on summer weekends, when the place was lousy with tourists. The one fly in the ointment was that Pompeo sometimes, now, for instance, took his job too seriously. Why had he stopped the man in the first place? Had he been hurting anyone, threatening anyone? No, He was just walking peaceably up the hill, and what was the law against that? Probably he was heading up past the Hacienda Encantada and out of town entirely. The dirt road wound through the dry hills all the way to San Lucas Tepitipac. That was probably where he was going. If Pompeo had just let him continue on his way, he would not be a problem, or at least he'd be somebody else's problem, which was just as good. But here the man was, sitting right in front of him. Pompeo, as conscientious as ever, had made his official report of the detention, and unless the chief wanted to tear it up and erase it from the log, he was stuck with it. But this Sandoval would not do. Despite his many and varied self-acknowledged deficiencies, he was a man who was faithful to the regulations and to his responsibilities, as he understood them to be. Besides, what if Pompeo found out? So far, the stranger had told Sandoval that his name was Manuel Garcia, a likely story. If there was a more common, less traceable name in Mexico, Sandoval would have liked to know what it was. That he was from the village of Santiago Matatlan, and that he was on his way to Oaxaca to look for work. But the second-class bus that he thought would take him to the city didn't go there after all, and it dropped him off in Teotitlan to catch a bus that did. Pompeo was right. None of it added up. Sandoval didn't like the man's story, and he certainly didn't like the man. It wasn't that this Garcia was belligerent exactly, but he wasn't what you'd call cooperative either. And there was an indefinable air of sleepy menace about him. Sandoval was ill at ease being in the same room with him. Ask a question, and Garcia would answer, but at his leisure, with a weary, downward curl on his lips, and sometimes even a sigh, as if he'd been through this 100 times before, and his patience was being sorely tried. And would you mind getting on with it so he could go on his way, since you were just going through the motions, and there was nothing you could do to him? Surly, that's what he was. Contemptuous. He dealt with the police before, Sandoval had no doubt about that. Probably he'd been in prison. That face, those tattoos. Maybe even in the United States.
Ever been north of the border?
Sandoval asked. No. That was the way most of his answers had been. One or two words, or three at most.
Ever been in prison?
No, not me. He yawned and gestured with his chin at the coffee pot on the burner. How about a cup of that coffee, chief?
Help yourself, said Sandoval. The cups are on the sink.
He watched Garcia get up to pour himself a cupful. He wasn't a particularly big man, but he was bull-necked and thick-chested, and he carried his arms a little away from himself, in that showy way that serious weightlifters have. More evidence of U.S. jail time, Sandoval thought. That was one of the truly crazy things about the Yankee prisons. Weightlifting rooms. Why in the world would you want to give your bad guys bigger muscles? Garcia sat down with his coffee, which had been on the burner for 8 hours now. Coffee making was the responsibility of the junior officer, Pepe, who could not be dissuaded from the notion, taught to him by his mother, that the longer coffee sat, the more tasty and restorative the brew. It had been all Sandoval could do to get him not to boil it for 5 minutes. Garcia took a sip of the tarry stuff and made a face, but had another swallow anyway. 2 were enough, however, even for a tough guy like him. He set the cup on the desk and leaned back with another sigh, an audible, resigned sigh, to see what Sandoval's next pointless question would be. He scratched listlessly at his chin. It had been 4 or 5 days since he'd shaved, and stiff, silvery bristles glistened on his jaw. It was clear that the man thought he wasn't dealing with a real cop here. Well, that was true enough. Sandoval knew only too well that he wasn't a real cop. All the same, he wasn't without resources. The village had sent him to Mexico City for a week-long training program. And as part of that program, he had undergone a full day's instruction, complete with role-playing, on techniques of interrogation. He had learned a few things there. He had learned that one doesn't lay all one's cards on the table up front. Oh, no. One baits a trap, and then gently, subtly, helps the interrogee fall into it. He stapled his fingers at his chin and smiled in a friendly, relaxed manner, although his heart was thumping away.
"I understand," he said casually, "that the bus driver let you off here and told you you could catch a bus to Oaxaca in the morning. Is that correct?"
"That's right."
"Well, that's very interesting. It's true there is a bus from here to Oaxaca, but if I remember correctly, the bus from Santiago Matatlan also continues right up 190 to Oaxaca. Why then would he let you off here?"
"I'm just telling you what he told me. Maybe he wanted me off the bus. I don't think he liked me."
That part certainly held water, Sandoval thought. So much for that trap. But he had more than that to work with.
"I see. But you know, now that I think of it, unless I'm mistaken, it no longer makes a stop in Teotitlan at all. So how?"
"I didn't say it stopped in Teotitlan," Garcia said, without even a momentary pause. "He dropped me off at the junction where the road heads into the village. I walked in from there."
Sandoval had to hand it to him. Very cool, very sure of himself.
"I see," he said yet again, scowling. "To get the morning bus to Oaxaca, the one that leaves from the market square."
"That's right. Unless there's another bus stop."
"No, it's the only one. So then what exactly were you doing on the road up to the Hacienda Encantada?"
"I don't know nothing about no Hacienda Encantada. I was going up the hills, find some place to sleep where no one would bother me."
Sandoval was thoroughly discomposed by now. He was no good at this sort of thing. Why did he even try it? He didn't believe a word of Garcia's story, but he didn't see what he could do about it. The man was too experienced for him. He knew a fraud when he saw one. One thing Sandoval did know, the sooner Garcia was out of Teotitlan, the better. But nothing could be done about that until morning. All he could do for now was to see that he made no trouble tonight.
"Well, my friend," he said, "we'll give you a nice place to sleep, and I don't think anyone will bother you."
"You're putting me in jail?"
"Just for the night,"
Sandoval said, first darting a glance into the outer office to make sure Pompeo was there, in case Garcia was going to make things difficult. But Garcia merely shrugged.
"Do I get a meal out of it?"
"Unless you have an objection to goat meat tacos."
Another shrug.
"Okay. And what happens in the morning?"
"We'll see in the morning."
He signaled through the doorway to Pompeo, who marched Garcia off to the women's cell. There were two cells in the municipal building, one for men and one for women. But the men's was currently occupied by the Herrera brothers, who were sleeping off too many glasses of mezcal at their sister's wedding, which left only the women's cell. Garcia went without a word, contracting the burly muscles of his shoulders, a bodybuilder showing his stuff. Sandoval hoped with all his heart that nothing would happen in the morning, that he'd simply send Garcia on his way and be done with it. But there were, of course, obligations that went with his job. For all he knew, Garcia was a dangerous fugitive. If it came about later that Sandoval had done no checking on him, it might well bring the unwelcome attentions of the Attorney General's office and the state police, the Polizia Ministerial. Talk about trouble. He downloaded onto his computer the photo that Pepe had taken of Garcia as a matter of routine. This he attached to an email query to the Policía Municipal of Santiago Matatlán, asking what they could tell him about the man. He did it with a little smile of satisfaction. Garcia would no doubt have been surprised to learn that even here, in this out-of-the-way little village, the police had certain high-tech methods at their disposal. Santiago Matatlán, about 20 kilometers to the south, was a mezcal-producing village even smaller than Teotitlan, perhaps 600 souls. The police would know everything that went on there, and they had a computer, too. He sighed and raised his eyes to the ceiling.
"Just let it not require that I have any dealings with the state police," he prayed silently.
Nothing good ever came of dealing with the Policía Ministerial, as he had learned through hard experience. When he'd first become chief, there were only a few village ancients who had any recollection of the last time someone had been murdered in Teotitlan. And they didn't remember it themselves, recalling only their parents talking about it when they'd been children. A woman had bashed her straying husband's head in with a stone mano. That had happened more than 50 years ago, before Teotitlan even had a police chief. None of Sandoval's predecessors had ever been confronted with a homicide. And what had happened? With only 2 measly weeks on the job under his belt, he had been confronted with one. It had been a terrible experience, the worst experience he'd ever had. No doubt it had taken years off his life, and it was a marvel that he hadn't developed ulcers. A group of Canadians who had been staying in a bed and breakfast in Teotitlan had been hiking in the dry hills near the village. One of them, in falling down the shaft of a long-abandoned silver mine, had discovered the body, the skeleton really, of a young girl. He had reported it to Sandoval, who had brought in old Dr. Bustamente, the district's médico legista, or médico forense, as he had taken to calling himself since CSI had started appearing on Mexican television, who had declared that she'd been murdered, a savage series of blows to the head, a finding that was soon confirmed by the state médico legista in Oaxaca. So in had come the swaggering Policía Ministerial, thuggish and intimidating, to take charge, issuing commands, making threats and accusations, frightening old men and women, interrogating respectable people with terrible sexual questions, things people in Teotitlan never even thought of before. The worst of it was that for a whole month, the Policía Ministerial worked on it, terrorizing the whole village, and in the end, they never did solve it. And so the poor child's bones now lay in a box in some grisly police storeroom somewhere in Oaxaca, instead of in a Christian grave in the Teotitlan cemetery, where Sandoval and the elders wanted to inter it. And so the mere thought of the possibility of having to deal once more with those arrogant, overbearing bullies in their sinister black uniforms straight out of some old Gestapo movie, and very fitting that was, had his stomach churning now. But, happily, it appeared that this was not to be. The reply from the police chief of Santiago Matatlan was waiting for him when he came in the next morning. "This man, Manuel Garcia, is not the resident of Santiago Matatlan. He appeared here 2 days ago, unable to give a satisfactory reason for his arrival. He has committed no crime of which I am aware, but his appearance and manner are not wholesome. I sent him on his way, and I suggest you do the same." Nothing could have suited Sandoval more. At 8:10 a.m., he stood with Garcia in the parking area between the church and the covered market, having first fed him a jail breakfast of butter tortillas, refried beans, and cocoa. At 8:15, the Oaxaca-bound bus rattled in, its predictable 15 minutes late. Sandoval handed Garcia a 50-peso note he'd signed out from the treasury. The fare was 10 pesos, and told him to keep the change. "Thanks." He watched as Garcia mounted the steps into the bus. "Better if you don't come back here," he called after him, not unkindly.
Garcia turned and laughed. Back here? Not a chance. You won't see me again? Not in this lifetime.
God willing, Sandoval mouthed to himself, watching with relief as the bus got on its dusty, noisy way.